but this is why I'm asking the question. When James Felt led the drive to redo the zoning resolution years before this, in 1961 resolution, when he started to get opposition to it, he came up with the notion for the zoning resolution that there would be a moratorium, a year moratorium, before it went into effect. And it helped calm down a lot of people.
It may very well.
And so I wondered if he might have been the one who suggested this as a way to help diffuse.
I can't say specifically. Yeah. But
it's conceivable. It's
certainly conceivable that what he did shortly before that suggestion, because I remember, you know, meeting with him, and there was no question that our original meeting with the real estate group was, you know, some were in favor, but there was a lot of opposition.
Right, right.
And so the moratorium idea, I think, did,
so, and
and
it certainly helped ease.
So, but it came in at your level. In other words, what you got from Mayor Wagner didn't have it, but out of the discussions.
Right.
And was it in by the time of the hearing or only after the hearing?
No, I believe it was after the hearing.
Because the hearing was on the bill as printed in the city record, and it's not in that.
Right.
But it is in the version that came out. There's actually one nice historical record is when your committee took action and sent forward the bill to the full council, it came with a very good report, which you probably wrote or oversaw, which called out the specific changes, and that was why it's clear.
The three of us at that point, I mean, I had the original draft, and submitted it to Bob Lowe and to Dick Aldrich and whatever comments they had, you know.
Now, help me understand also the dynamics again, because we had the little flurry over the Percy Pine Mansions that were saved over the holidays. Your committee's now at work. It's January. Then February rolls around, and you probably will recall the first weekend in February, the Brokaw Mansions, which had triggered it in September, were now demolished on a Friday in a weekend. And everybody went crazy in terms of the press and everything. What was that like for you?
I have the fellow who wrote specifically to the Brokaw issue. Let me just pull that out.
Sure.
And get...
we know that agitated a lot of folks on the Upper East Side and elsewhere, but they were particularly...
That was terrible because the Brokaw was indeed unique.
Yeah, and the commission had already designated it, but with no force of law behind their preliminary designation.
Right. There may have been a contract already, you know, which we didn't know about.
Well, actually, there was a press interview with Anthony Campagna, the 80-year-old head of the family that had bought the site to redevelop it. And he basically said they moved up their demolition schedule by a month because they had gotten word that something was going on. So everybody was taken by surprise about the speed of that.
Yes.
Transaction, if you will.
Well, that was most unfortunate.
Yeah.
Yeah, let me read you. This is John L. Handy, dated December 4th, 1964. I have written to the mayor and the governor after living in New York for 45 years. I am saddened to see the old landmarks and beautiful sections sacrificed to strictly commercial projects, which change the image of old New York and destroy its traditional character. I appreciate that the world must march on, but I feel very strongly that beautiful areas such as Fifth Avenue between 78th Street and 85th Street, which is largely the cross from the property owned by the Metropolitan Museum of Art, should be preserved for those who love it now and for future generations. To tear down the interesting and beautiful Brokaw Mansion, which is one of the two magnificent buildings which flank the corner of 79th Street and Fifth Avenue, is really a crime and an unnecessary sacrifice, I feel, to commercialism. I should like to enter my protest against this desecration of traditional New York and encourage those who are working to save the Brokaw Mansion particularly, but in general to preserve the beauty and tradition of that particular stretch of the family.
Right.
That was John L. Andy.
Oh, great.
Point and five, Park Avenue.
So the Brokaw Mansion's come down, the editorials
right.
start going. Did that speed up the process you had been working on? Because I mean, you guys must have felt pressure with, I know there were TV editorials
yeah.
and the Times kind of saying, what's going on at the council? Did that
well
prod it along in your mind? Any memory on that? Or?
No, I really don't think it did. Of course, the mayor was very interested in getting yeah. this done as soon as possible, and we felt that, you know, other than laying the groundwork earlier on, that it was also essential if we were going to ever get this thing into law that we had to move expeditiously, because we didn't want sometimes acrimony to spring up and, you know, all of a sudden the council people would be nervous about voting for it.
Gotcha. So you wanted to get it through while it...
We wanted to see that... we had recognized that we had been able to persuade our council members in the main that this is beneficial for the city and you know, it would not in any way affect them in their re-election
right.
bid. And so, but the sooner the better if we can move this along. We made certainly concessions where we felt concessions were necessary.
And I understand the commission agreed to all of those. I mean, in the records it states that the... that any change that you got, that your committee had come up with was agreed to, it didn't have to be, but they agreed with the wisdom of it, or at least
yeah.
publicly signed
right.
on to it.
Yeah.
So that
well,
was a unified
I must say, the mechanics
yeah.
were, once we had, you know, made certain changes, we communicated with Jack, first
Jack Lust? Or
Lutsky.
Lutsky, there we
That's
go.
That's the name.
We did it before
Jack,
the end of the
I
meeting.
Said Jack Lutsky. he was a very dynamic figure, if you remember.
I've only heard about him. Yeah.
Very dynamic. I mean, short, but, you know.
Fireplug.
He was a fireplug, and the mayor, he was perfect for the mayor. He really was. So, we would get Jack involved, and then... I would, on some occasions, I went in with Jack to see the mayor, and he said, okay, let's get this over to Jeffrey and see, you know, that we can get quick approval and that he'd have no objection. You know, how he works it out, that's his business. And that's what was done. And, you know, ultimately he came back and we moved along.
One last question on potential... areas of trouble in the bill, if you have any memories of, and I remember hearing this from somebody, and I
yeah.
haven't been able to find in any of my notes who I heard it from, but was there a concern about religiously owned property? Did the Trinity Church or any
yeah,
of the other big real estate holdings come in as
there,
an issue?
There was some concern about that, you know, essentially, they were concerned as to getting an understanding how, for example, if there's a historic district, how it's going to impact, you know, the church and the membership and so forth. But, in fact, we did meet with some of the clergy to ask the wage, you know, any difficulties. And most of them were in favor, by the way. You know, they thought it was a good thing. But they did ask some questions as to whether or not it will adversely affect them in any way. And, I mean, there was some opposition, you know, to it on that basis, but...
Did they cite the Constitution or just a general unease?
Just general. No, the Constitution.
It wasn't a First Amendment issue.
It wasn't a First Amendment issue at this point. There were some people who had raised the First Amendment issue, I must say, but I don't remember the clergy doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Back to just the atmosphere at the time, still before
yeah.
the passage, as your committee, I think, was just about to vote it out, the old merchant's house was being threatened, and there was this, the Times, this children's crusade, this march of kids with guitars singing, where have all the landmarks gone, going down, and ultimately coming down to the city council with petitions.
Absolutely.
You have any memories of that episode?
I do remember it, you know, but I can't tell you that, I mean, we...
You were well down the pipe by then.
We thought that that was, you know, very interesting, very unique, and they were delightful from the point of view of, you know, the activity. But, you know, it didn't have any...
Policy impact.
Policy impact. Yeah. That's correct.
That's great.
In terms of your fellow council members, were you being asked questions by them, or they saying, we're hearing from our constituents for, against, whatever?
Oh, very definitely.
Was there were certain of the council people in certain areas of the city hearing more in favor or more against? Can
you
remember?
Well, there were definitely some areas where they were opposed to it, and, you know, they were concerned as to mainly expenditures. Cost, and you know, how it's going to affect some of their constituents, which would adversely affect them. And ultimately, we were able to, you know, overcome.
What was the area that you represented?
I was
at large, right? All of you.
I was councilman at large at that time.
So, but Queens was sort of silent on the issue, you were hearing from the
I remember there was like
we really didn't have that much criticism.
I think there's actually some support. I think there was a particular landmark that was being an effort to save at that time in Queens. They're trying to raise money for, and I don't know which it was. One of the old mansions.
Yeah.
It was
like Kingsland.
Kingsland. And I think that was up, and they were supportive. I remember.
They were.
There was one or two others. Get a kick out of it, probably. Got that in your memory book, but I thought you might get a kick out of that.
I never had that. Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
I'll make a copy of
this. Yeah, help yourself, because it came up in our searches. And but the
when you made the changes, did you have the council at the city council redraft, or did it get sent back over to the law department to redraft the changes?
As I recall, we did send it back to Jack Lutze, and we requested, you know,
they come with a new.
We
language.
Told them exactly what we were looking for, and they would arrange.
And they dealt with the law department, because I always heard that Bernie Friedlander. You know, I was the lawyer for the Landmarks Commission for about 20 years, but I dealt with Jeff Friedlander, who had helped draft the amendments in the 70s, and he was totally devoted to the law. I could get Jeff to rally round us whenever we needed.
Yeah.
But Bernie had by then gone into pensions, but I was always told that he was the one who worked on the original draft.
But you never interfaced with him. Was our
go-between. The interface.
Yes,
he was the interface.
Right.
And so we would suggest to him what we wanted as far as change was concerned that we felt was beneficial, and that was the, you know, we would indicate to him the policy of the commission members who were involved, and he said, all right, let's see what we can do, and there were times when he came back and said, look, you're going to have to go back and see if you can get the minds to change, because we decided we don't want to make this.
Can you think of some examples?
I can't
like
give
that.
You no specifically, but there were.
Well, one of the ones I heard was, over the years, was that the hardship procedure might have been given to, like, BSA rather than left at the Landmarks Commission and the hardship
pool. That could be. That may have been one of the situations involved. I can't be specific.
I mean, I always thought it was wise it remained in with Landmarks because, you know, our law is a much more sophisticated law on the idea that there's time for a plan and for condemnation, et cetera. Most laws don't even think to that extent, and BSA doesn't deal with things like that.
You know, speaking of our law compared to other laws, when you vote, committee approved it, and that nice report was written explaining all the work that the committee had done, it references the fact that over 70 laws from around the country had helped inform this process. And I know that the commission before the law came to you, they had looked at a lot of those.
New Orleans,
and did your committee also look at those directly too?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. at
in New Orleans, they looked at in Charleston. I know Charleston, we're always in Boston, yeah, is always Boston, right, put in the mix
so
there. For
we, you know, we did have an opportunity to review it in our consideration. But the main draft of the bill really was homegrown.
The back to helping understand the dynamics, once it came out of your committee, and the committee voted to send it to the full council.
Right.
Did that pretty much seal the deal? I mean, was it something wouldn't have been allowed out of committee if it wasn't? Was that kind of, that's yeah, my understanding of the dynamics,
right,
at that
politically,
time?
Everything in our committee we discussed with the majority leader and his council, and we indicated our recommendations, and he was on target and going along, because he knew that the mayor was very strong.
Well, and I also know kind of the public and the private perceptions are not always the same in these things, because I know there were still some people who were worried that at the last minute, you know, after the council voted it, of course the mayor has a little hearing before he signs it, and I know there were, at least in the landmark circles, not at the level of the plaques,
right,
but at the grassroots level, yeah, worries about last minute opposition, and indeed at the mayor's hearing, before he signed the bill, a number of recalcitrant real
right,
estate types showed up. And
absolutely,
was there any doubt at all, though, really? I mean, going that far, I mean, in your mind, it was...
Well, we recognized there, yeah, was going to be criticism.
Right.
And the mayor was very strong.
Yeah.
He had... he was, as I indicated right at the outset, his attitude was that let's see if we can pass it.
I have to say, there's a wonderful quote from the mayor when it's passed, which I must not have given the preservationists too much comfort, but he basically said, I hear the opposition to this. If there are problems, I've been assured by council leadership, turning to you, that the council will immediately look to amend to take care of this. And
that was...
That's never, thank goodness, hasn't been the case. But
that was, you know, our mantra, really,
right, right,
for all of the adverse groups. If we felt that it required change, we wouldn't hesitate to make the appropriate amendments. Fortunately, that was the mantra.
You weren't there when the amendments came back in 73.
That's
right.
Right. No, that's true.
Yeah. And they were only to strengthen the law. They were,
right,
not to diminish,
right,
it in any
that,
way.
That's correct. Yeah. I was already, yeah, I had to, went to the assembly.
Uh-huh.
And then I, yeah, went on the bench.
I would just note that in passing, the loss
in fact,
of
I
the...
ended up in the appellate division, the second uh-huh, block.
The loss of the at-large council people, I think, was a sad loss. I was really sorry when they went, having dealt with council people. I felt that, you know, it was always...
Well, they were some of the most alive and,
right,
committed council and engaged council members. Yeah.
Including Bobby Wagner Jr.
Oh,
sure,
yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Tony Olivieri.
I know Bobby Wagner Jr. very well.
Yeah.
As a young man.
Yeah.
Very
yeah,
much.
But, I mean, you know, I just... That extra step back,
yes,
was important.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
true.
Let me throw another thought out just to get your reaction to, yeah, it, because it's a theory that, once again, I'm not sure who it credited to, but that there was some thought that the real estate community's opposition might also have been slightly muted because they really believed that this was unconstitutional and they were going to challenge it legally. And so, in a sense, between that and the moratorium, it would all be thrown out by the time they really had to deal with it.
I'm sure that... you know, was there. It was not evident, but in some of the comments that were made in our meetings, there were clearly some individuals who felt that
you know, they said to me, and rightly so, their top priority in the years they were commissioners, that the top thing they had to preserve was the law.
Yeah.
And they were very conscious of any legal, of any legal exposure to the law.
Yes.
And it was only when it finally got to the proposal to build the tower of Grand Central that they basically said, this is worth risking the law. But up until that time, Singer,
well, there
Billing,
was litigation.
Oh,
yeah. Earlier.
In terms of them consciously taking a position that they knew was going to call everything into question.
So it wasn't litigation, but they really wanted it to be, you know, they were careful in their approvals and denials.
Well, I would say they were litigation adverse. Doesn't mean there wasn't any, but I would say they were certainly litigation adverse.
Were you all following that over at the city council, sort of the...
Once it got passed?
Well...
Once it got passed, were you following sort of how the approvals were going, whether there was litigation?
Very definitely, but, you know, at that point, we were just involved...
You were on the sidelines.
Personal interest, you know, very much... when you were involved to the extent we were in drafting this law, you know, you always look to the situation to make certain that it remains stable. And so naturally, you know, we were very interested in what the modifications were, what the amendments were, and also if anybody was going to challenge it.
I gave a talk when I got the Lions Award from HDC. The ceremony was in the Appellate Division Courthouse, First Department. And I gave a talk on the importance of the First Department in how that law, we weren't ever in the Second Department, except for on a very minor thing. But in the First Department, they played a major role in how that law came through and was perceived and how,
absolutely.
You know, they were really critical.
Yeah.
Appellate Division's my heroes.
No question.
But you're right.
I was in the Second Department.
Yeah, no, I know you were Second. That's why I was saying, I know you didn't have the cases, but... The First Department got a lot of critical cases, and they were the turnaround in Penn Central.
Very good.
Yeah. Shortly after the bill was passed, the American Institute of Architects wrote an article, and they called you an adroit champion of the law. And clearly, your memories are confirming that was indeed the case.
Well,
that was, we were lucky to have you there at the time.
So did you keep following the court cases later?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
You know, the interest was always there.
Yeah.
See that this law remains viable.
Do you have any memories? I'm just curious if you have any particular memories of people. I know somebody said that Whitney North Seymour was very involved in helping just create a positive climate for this. Do you have?
He was. I had occasion to speak to him from time to time.
Just because he was a civic player.
He was a civic player.
Right.
Again, as the policy, not necessarily impacted on it, but as a person who was well thought of and we liked his opinions, we were anxious to hear from those individuals that we could quote were in favor.
Do you think he made a difference at the Bar Association?
It could very well have.
Uh-huh. But you weren't aware of it?
I wasn't aware of it. Uh-huh. But I had no doubt that he was very active, of course, with the Association of the Bar, and that when I got the letter from Louis Isaacs, Jr. and the committee people that we were going to speak with, I felt that he would be helpful.
On this question of the constitutionality and the real estate interest maybe saying we're going to challenge it, I always heard that Whitney's support for it and saying this is constitutional had a lot of weight within the legal community.
That could very well
but
be
you didn't see it on that front. Yeah.
Well, I knew that he was in favor of it, and certainly my conversations with him, I indicated that, I certainly hope that you can use your wonderful reputation and, overcoming whatever opposition is in the
Those early amicus briefs, he's got the senior bar all there of counsel.
Yeah. You know? Right. Well, you know, he was very prominent. Yeah.
Any memories of your working with James Vanderpool, who was the executive director of working on, with Jeffrey Platt's executive director at the Landmarks Committee?
Right.
Did you have any direct interface here?
Well,
memories
not to any great extent, but we did have an opportunity, to speak to each other. He seemed to be a very intelligent person, very knowledgeable in this area, and we recognize that, that he'd be very supportive of it.
Are there any other people, kind of like the Jack Lutzky type, that were on the scene and helpful, but might not pop up because they were in a position that you'd recognize?
Well, I got to say, our then majority leader, David was very, very active. And he later on became a judge, Supreme Court judge, and the administrative judge of the city of New York.
This is David Ross.
David Ross, yes.
He was
a very dear friend, and as I say, he was instrumental in making me chair of the committee.
Had you been chair of the committee before the bill was assigned to it?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
So you had been dealing with other...
Other issues.
Yes, but when this came, was this a much bigger workload than you'd been dealing with on most of the bills?
Well, there were some bills that, you know, had a workload, but this impacted immediately with a substantial workload because we had a time situation that we recognized was very vital.
And were you given a staff, or you relied on Ross's staff?
No, we had a staff. Mm-hmm. We did have a staff. I mean, everybody knew that it's going to be... time-consuming, and that if we're going to be able to move expeditiously, we had to get some help, mm-hmm. because particularly in communicating with all the people we wanted to speak with, and the groups. So we had...
Were there any people on the staff level who later were involved with the city council, or do you remember anybody in particular?
Well, they were... I don't know if they were. They may have been. Of course, Dave Ross liked the staff that we had very mm-hmm. much. Mm-hmm. In fact, he was instrumental. He was actually the one who you know, provided us with staff.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm sure he utilized them mm-hmm. thereafter, you know, whenever he had.
Just one last thing in terms of the climate. When you read the various newspaper accounts, I mean, in kind of that time period, the early 60s and then 64 and the Brokaw and the Percy Pine, and there's just in the drumbeat of editorials, you almost had the sense that there was almost a perception that things had gotten out of control and something had to be done.
Yeah.
And that was part of the realization of the mayor and the council that just something had to be done, and yeah. that helped drive this. I think that's
an accurate portrayal of the events at that time. And certainly the mayor, who, Gracie Mansion was right nearby, and so he knew what was developing, and Jeffrey Platt, I'm sure, played a very good role, you know, in convincing him as to the importance of this concept.
If this triggers one thing you might shed a little light on in a larger context is there's some question in people's mind, you know, the bill went to the mayor in the spring of 64 and it kind of sat there till the fall. And I know that the mayor tragically lost his wife that spring.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine that didn't slow things down for a period of time.
Did that
have an impact any,
that
on
may
government?
Very well, but I can't tell you specifically right. that it did.
But do you have any
no
memory
doubt.
Of government kind of slowing down a bit because of that? Or
well, I don't think it's government slowed down.
But, or just anything in the mayor's office, I guess. But.
The mayor may have possibly slowed down, but Jack Lutzky was...
Yeah, Lutzky sounds like he was keeping things burning.
He was quite an aide.
He was
very dynamic, and he knew everything about the city.
Yeah. I mean,
he had city charter, you know, everything was on his tongue, and whatever the municipal laws were concerned, he was right on top of it.
When did you first go on the council? I'm just curious.
61.
Did you ever overlap with somebody who was just at the end of his life at that time? He died in 1963, but he was quite a prominent civic figure. A guy named Albert Bard, a lawyer, very involved.
The name is familiar to me.
Because he was the one who had helped the state authorizing legislation. The Bard Act was named for him in Albany, though he wasn't an assemblyman, he was a lawyer, but it was passed in 56. I was just curious if your paths had crossed in the... Halls and stages.
The name is very familiar, but I can't specifically, indicate that we had a...
I can't let an interview go by without asking people about that.
Were you
character.
Practicing law before you went on the city council?
Oh,
that's
yeah.
sort of what you've been doing.
Yes.
Practice. And did you have a special interest in land use, or just?
Well, I knew about land use uh-huh. and real estate law, but not. I certainly had a knowledge of it.
Mm-hmm.
But no specific interest, mm-hmm. you know, as an overriding situation from that point of view.
You know, just a maybe closing thought, and then Dorothy has another question. But the somebody did a was talking to Wagner well after he left office, yeah. In the context of something going on with Gracie Mansion, and the subject of the landmarks law came up. And to paraphrase, he basically said he thought it was probably going to be the most lasting legacy of his administration, which I thought was kind of an interesting yeah. insight. When you look back at all the things you were involved with at the city council, does this kind of is this at the top of mm-hmm. things, or?
Well, there's no question that he felt very strongly when he first came, you know, when I came into his office and he discussed it with me. There was no question that he was
really
very vigorous in his, and wasn't a vigorous man, you know. But he was vigorous about getting this enacted.
And personally, in terms of your career as a public yeah. service, does it rank high with?
Oh, absolutely, uh-huh. right at the top. In fact, I got to tell you, the other day, my daughter, my grandson asked if I would speak to his high school class, you know, about my background, things that were enacted, you know. Council and an assembly, and so I spoke, and I spoke to them about the landmark situation, and they had very interesting questions about it.
Where is the high school?
It's in Westchester, mm-hmm. Edgemont, mm-hmm. Edgemont High School. Mm-hmm.
Well, I hope we've carried out the law in a way that you didn't have too many qualms about as it was going forward.
No, whoever has presided over it has done an excellent job. They really have. And I think that looking back, it certainly matches the type of landmark laws in Paris, and Boston, and any other municipality. I think it has done an enormously favorable job for the city. No question.
We'd like to think so.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, Jeffrey Platt's son, Charles Platt, was a commissioner for a while.
Oh, is that right?
Yes, yeah, later, and he's the one I knew well. I mean, I knew Jeffrey Platt, yeah. but I knew him well. And Charles Platt once accused me of defending the landmarks law like a mother tiger defending her cub. And when you talk about, you know, the reluctance, you know, feeling the thing you had to preserve was the law, I mean, that's what I've always thought, that you try to, you know, you try to not shirk the fights you must take on, but you try to make sure that the law works,
absolutely.
And you know that at all costs you don't lose the law, but it's not by being chicken and never you know facing up,
absolutely.
But it's by making your choices.
Absolutely,
and so
long as it has a stability effect, and this did.
Well, thank you so much for being so generous.
Can I ask one question?
Series of questions.
The one I've always been interested in is that our hardship so different from other laws, and we distinguish between the tax exempt that are religious and historic as opposed to subject to real estate tax. Did that come in the original draft, and was that something you discussed as you reviewed it?
There was no question that it was discussed,
uh-huh.
and in fact that was a concern of a number of councilmen, mm-hmm. because they were wondering how it was going to affect their districts,
right.
and you know, cost was always a factor mm-hmm. that a legislator thinks about mm-hmm. When he goes back to his constituents. Mm-hmm. And we were able to, you know, carry the issue that it's not going to impact unfavorably.
Interestingly enough, there have only been about 19 hardship applications in the history of the law because...
That's extraordinary.
Yeah, it is extraordinary because these are really viable buildings, right?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah,
I mean that is extraordinary.
Yeah, for 20 years,
65 now.
You know, there've been a few that burned from fires and so on, but I mean, basically, these buildings are usable buildings, and if you just have that as your mindset, that I can use this building, how am I going to maximize my return and find it useful, as opposed to you know what's the most I can do?
And of course, in the most instances, people made appropriate changes, keeping it, you know, consistent with the landmark regulations, and the buildings have been maintained very well, those that have been considered landmark.
The other one that I wondered how much it got discussed at your committee was the whole question of the Landmarks Commission reviewing city-owned properties, which the original provision is just for an advisory report,
right,
which later gets published. And then a few years ago, there was an amendment to the Art Commission law where some of the Art Commission's binding jurisdiction, yeah, was given to the Landmarks Commission. How much was that discussed, how landmarks would work with other agencies,
well,
city agencies?
Well, it was discussed, but once we got into that, very frankly, as I recall, Jack Lutsky was not happy to go into that area. And he tried to prevail on us, and he was able to prevail upon the majority leader that might create, the type of opposition that can impact the legislation.
It's also interesting.
Because of resistance from other agencies,
yes,
over this.
Well,
was the concern to have one city agency telling another city agency? Or
that,
was it just that landmarks might be too precious over that, these buildings?
Yeah, I think the latter.
Mm-hmm.
I really do.
Well, one thing that comes clear is one reason it took the pre-law commission,
yeah,
so long to come up with a draft that they gave the mayor that spring,
yeah,
was that they had been meeting with almost any agency that could conceivably be interested,
yeah,
in that early drafting period,
right,
before it came to the council, including,
sure,
city planning several times, and sent it back to be redrafted. So I could imagine Lutsky feeling that they had handled all of that before it got to this point didn't want to open,
exactly,
any of that up.
Yeah.
That would seem to be,
yeah,
possible.
Because he felt that would have,
yeah,
a real delay,
yeah,
situation,
yeah,
and that he didn't want to do anything that might
unravel it.
Was an unraveling as far as what we were able to accomplish at that point.
Well, this has
That's
been
it.
Wonderfully
right.
helpful. Thank you so
and
much.
And I'd have recognized you anywhere because I knew the picture.
Well, I don't look like the picture.
No, but you look enough like the picture that I could recognize you. I have the same problem.
Wait, one last thing, if you'd be,
yeah,
willing,
we're gonna
have this interview transcribed.
Yeah.
And when we do that, if you don't mind, I'd like to send it to you to make sure that if there are any things you want to add or you want to change, because then we'd like to have it as a record for people in the future who, you know, in 20 years will say, what did he say about that? And we can say, well, here you go. So that'd be great.
I'll be very happy.
Well, thank you for help.
Let me just... I'm talking about the council.
Right.
The committee, that there should be historic districts.
Right.
The only question is, was that area...
400-foot.
The 400-foot for the individual landmark.
Yeah, that, was a factor.
Were people a little more nervous about individual designation than about districts? Because it was...
Yeah, but there were some that were a little concerned about districts. They didn't want it to, extend too far into their, where they had, in their own mind, more difficulty with individuals, mm-hmm, who felt that this was, they were going to get much more preference than, mm-hmm, anybody else in the district. So that was a factor.
Mm-hmm. Well, Queens was difficult at first, but now Queens is among the boroughs that is in there begging for landmarks.
Oh, yeah.
that's very
interesting. Right. Like incredible reversal just even in the last 25 years.
Right.
That's great. Oh, well,
let me just get this for you.
Okay.
And,